If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinton County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Today's episode is with Robbie Lyle, who has become a household name, or at least a household face, in English sports. He's the presenter and creator of AFTV, once known as Arsenal Fan TV, before the London Football Club intervened. With over a million subscribers on YouTube and a huge online presence that extends well beyond both Arsenal and football, AFTV is an outlier and a beacon of hope for fans wanting to take back some of the control in a world of sports dominated by money and corporations. Without getting too deep into it, I think it also speaks for something beyond football. The downtrodden fan rising up against the man. Their most popular video has more than 3 million views and features a supporter yelling about the club's owner. He's over in America. I bet he don't even know the fucking result. He's just bought a ranch bigger than Birmingham. He bought a vineyard. He don't give a fuck about us. That video came just after a 4-0 defeat to Liverpool. And a quick glance at AFTV's most popular videos reveals the angry reactions to losses go far more viral than those after victories. This has led many fans and players, including Gary Neville and Hector Bellerin, to criticise the channel for profiting from the demise of the club they love. It's an accusation that irks Robbie, and he even managed to convince Neville it wasn't the case when he came on the show. The appearance of the former Man United and England player helped bring AFTV into the mainstream and solidify it as something beyond a social media fan channel. But what's made the channel so popular is the extreme emotional rants from grown men appearing to have breakdowns over the performance of their sporting idols. It's relatable and a type of therapy to their fellow suffering fans, but the ultimate pang of schadenfreude for rival fans, such as myself, a lifelong Tottenham supporter. Smart and eloquent, Robbie has positioned himself as the calm, Theroux-esque presenter in the eye of a storm of regular fans, including Claude, Ty, DT, and Troops, who explode to the rhythm of their microphone's conductor, Robbie. With an ITV documentary, Football Fans Under Their Skin, and the Real Football Fan Show on Channel 4, Robbie is on the cusp of superstardom and an example to all on social media of how to move from online to television. Yet, I get the impression he'll always be happier on social media, where he has a direct and immediate line to the people closest to his heart, the fans. Please do subscribe, even if you're an Arsenal fan, and especially if you're Spurs, on whatever platform you're on. You'll automatically get next week's podcast with Matthew Collins, a former racist and fascist football hooligan who became an anti-racist spy who helped save an MP's life.
You didn't think it would get as big as it has done, did you?
No, when I first started it, I thought I was onto something. I thought this would be something that could do really well. But obviously, it's how big it's become has been, it's been incredible. I mean, over a million subscribers on YouTube, even on other platforms, which we started later. Instagram's like 800,000, Facebook's heading in that sort of direction as well. I can't really go anywhere nowadays without getting stopped or anything. So it has become crazy. I thought it would do all right, but it's surpassed expectations,
Honestly, I've started this podcast, and I've been interviewing some like really, really fascinating people from around the world. Former Westboro Baptist Church person, an ex Hasidic Jew, the first ever blogger, all these people. And when I said I was speaking to Robbie, I mean, Robbie used to mean Robbie Williams, and now it means you. So how does that feel?
Well, I'm not sure I'm on the same level as you, Robbie Williams.
Well, I don't know. If someone says Robbie now. I mean, obviously in your house, it means you, definitely. But I mean, even the rest of the country, it could mean you.
A lot of people do know who I am. And it's been incredible. That's one part of it I wasn't really expecting. I wasn't expecting that, you know. I mean, the first time it started dawning on me, I'll be like, yeah, why is everyone always stopping me? And then I'll start thinking, I said, well, our content is being watched by over 30 million people every month. So I suppose, you know, and then the real crazy stuff's like when you go abroad. Like I was in America last year, I've been to Australia, even China, and like people are mobbing you and that, and you're just like, this is crazy. You know,
that's insane. I thought it might be just an England thing or something, but it's happening everywhere.
No, and it's honestly, like last year, I remember we had a pre-season tour of the States, and it was ridiculous. Like everywhere I went, it was crazy. I think been to a lot of countries, Singapore, China. It's been the same everywhere. It really has been really. You know, I've just found it overwhelming. It's been like, wow. We were just filming a couple of preview videos because we've got Norwich on Wednesday. So many games at the moment, you know. So, yeah, it's just really busy at the moment.
Are you listening with the fans on or off on the TV?
With the fans on. Well, I can't take it without it, you know. even though it's really, really fake, but it just gives it a little something, you know.
Yeah, that's what my family do as well, like my brother and my dad. But I listen without it because it drove me mad because I don't know, you're expecting them to react to a foul or something, and they don't. Obviously the fake noise.
They always get it wrong, don't they? It's always a bit out. But then when we're watching the Arsenal games, we're watching it. There's like we've created this sort of a socially distanced space where like there's about four or five of us watching it.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
So yeah, so we're watching it with the volume right down anyway, so we create the noise instead.
That's what it's about, isn't it? Speaking of noise and stadiums, this is a very subtle segue into what is the better stadium, Highbury or the new one?
Highbury.
Well, I say new one, it's about 20 years old.
Definitely Highbury, yeah.
My best mate lives in a flat on the old ground.
Oh yeah. I've been into those. Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah, gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, Highbury was a better atmosphere. Plus, as well, we used to win.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me. But whenever I was, because I'm a Spurs fan, so whenever I went there, I don't think we ever won at Highbury. not in my lifetime.
We were so strong at Highbury. We've had a decent enough record apart from up to recently at the Emirates as well. But it's just. I just feel, I don't know, the Emirates needs a league winning season to really establish. Yeah.
I feel the same way about the Spurs stadium, you know, and I think that's right now, that's not a popular opinion because everyone's raving about it.
Yeah, everyone was raving about the Emirates when we first went there as well.
Exactly.
But what you will start to see is like, if you haven't won anything and if like people start to see what we had, it sort of became a burden because it's like, especially when we went to the Emirates, we were promised things like, oh, well, the reason we're going there is because we're going to be able to compete with the Bayern Munich. We're going to be like the Bayern Munich of England. And
yeah,
we'll be able to compete for everything. We have to take this step to, and basically we've gone from winning titles to now the priority became top four there at first, just to keep money coming in. Till now it's like, we're nowhere near the title. So like everyone's like questioning, well, what was the point of moving? Yeah, even Arsene Wenger himself came out recently and said, we left our soul at Highbury. Now we've just become a very mediocre team.
It's like a 100-year plan.
Yeah. It's all the restraints. So
your grandchildren will be loving it. You know, you'll be getting the benefits, as will mine. But
well, they'll probably be building a new one then.
Yeah, I really do miss. Well, I miss the noise and everything, but part of that's nostalgia. And also because we were winning in our last season anyway. We won every game there, but it is what it is. But when you guys don't win, your hits are sometimes better on YouTube. Is that right?
It all depends on the game. we get criticized and told about this all the time. And really and truly, how it works is you get the most hits for the biggest games. So if Arsenal are playing Tottenham, if Arsenal are playing Man United, if Arsenal are playing, you know, Chelsea, those are massive games.
I had a look before. I mean, your best performing videos, there's no denying it. I mean, I think 16 out of the top 20 were big defeats.
It's about the consistency of your channel, right? And you can speak to anybody who does a YouTube channel. If you're just relying on viral videos to survive off of, it don't work like that. You've got to, people come to watch your content every day. How it works more is like, say we lost to, like the other day when we lost to Brighton.
Yeah.
That's a shock defeat. That's a defeat that no one's expecting. So then people, you will get sometimes people of other clubs now that will come on maybe to have a laugh at our expense because they're like, oh, wow, I wonder what these guys are going to, they're going to lose it today because, wow, they lost to Brighton. But when people say stuff like that, they really don't understand our channel. And they really don't understand the success of it.
It's what Gary Neville said, wasn't it?
He said that at first. He had to, you know, once he sat down with us on that, he had to change his mind on that. Yeah. But, you know, I'm like, well, hold on. Newspapers and BBC and all they work in the same way. If put it this way, if Manchester United lost to Brighton or even say Arsenal losing to Brighton or whoever, you lose to one of those sort of teams that you're not expected to lose to, the game gets pushed to the start of match of the day. Why is that? Right? But if Man United tonk Brighton 5-0, it'd probably be in the middle or near the end. You know what I mean? So it's a natural thing that happens. It's not just a phenomenon that, AFTV, we're going to get onto it. But, our numbers stack up. You know what I mean? We follow the team over the years now, 7 years we've been doing it.
Yeah.
And we consistently get numbers, excellent numbers per month for all the games. And if you used to look at our Arsenal's history, we've won nearly all of our, we've won most of our games. So, yes, there can be a spike sometimes when there's a shock defeat or there's a horrible defeat. But also we get massive views for massive wins. We beat Tottenham, it goes through the roof. We beat United. I actually sometimes enjoy the fact that people think so simplistically about AFTV because I'm like, they really don't understand the sort of secret sauce to what we do, which is basically we're consistently there at every single game. And then we've got, the genuine fans. So you get really, really, really good content. You get real content. I get stopped by so many fans of other clubs who say, oh, watch your content. You know what? Maybe, mate, I came on at first to have a laugh.
Yeah.
But actually now I see fans that I see you've got on your channel. We've got guys like that at our club. I can relate. I can relate to everything that's going on. So
it's funny because that's part of why I wanted to talk to you actually, because it's so unique, AFTV, that it crosses over. It's not just Arsenal fans. And if it was, you'd be limited to sort of an exclusive club, whereas you're this huge thing. It's enormous what's happened, really. So firstly, congratulations. I think it's wonderful. And I think, what you were just saying, it is a simplistic view that people take. And I think other journalists, and you mentioned the BBC and all of that, when I make documentaries, I have this real sort of paradox in my mind because I'll be doing a lot, I've done documentaries about very serious topics, like somebody's had an abortion or somebody wanted to commit suicide, things like that. And when I'm talking to them, they might start crying when they're talking about what's going on. And most of me, I'm not a maniac, most of me is like, oh God, this is awful. But there is a tiny part, if I'm completely honest, there's a tiny part of my head that is going like, it's probably good for the documentary though. Like, I'm sad that she's sad. So if you want to start crying, but I think it's unlikely, but please, feel free to.
The way we've been playing recently, I might start crying.
I'll play you a highlights reel of the last couple of years and see if it brings tears because it will be an emotional episode. But is there any part of you then, and I know you might be loath to admit it because then the people who have that simplistic view, one might jump on that, but is there a part of you that when it's, 3-0, you're losing 3-0, then it's 4-0, that's going like the fourth goal, it's like, well, this is going to be, help us get some hits for the video.
No, 100%. I can hand on heart say to you, I never like that because I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
So, and I started it as a fan, and I go to games and I feel the pain, you know. So, honestly, I never ever feel like that. I'd say the only one thing I could say, which I found over the years, is that sometimes I used to be like, before I started doing AFTV, I found it hard. Like, we'd lose a game, I'd like drive home, I wouldn't talk to anybody, I couldn't watch match of the day, I couldn't. I found it, since I've been doing this, a little bit easier because I'm talking to people who feel like how I'm feeling.
Okay.
So, you know, so sometimes it's almost like it's a bit therapeutic, you know what I mean? Because I'm like, you know what? He feels like how I feel right now. Mm-hmm. Last year, around about this time, we lost the final to Chelsea in Baku. And I didn't even feel like doing interviews. That's how gutted I was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it was such a poor performance. But, you know, you're a fan, so you want your team to win. And, you know what I mean? And I don't just go outside. I mean, I'm inside every game. I'm celebrating every goal. So I don't want to lose games, you know what I mean? So, but I just look on how I view it. It's a journey. And I know I've been going to football for a very long time. And I know that in football, you win games and you lose some games, right? So it's a journey and you are going to have these horrible moments. But no, I never, ever want to see my team lose.
It is an issue, though. I mean, I, for example, Gary Neville, who's the very person who had a bit of a go, and I know he came on and it was very nice of him to do that, and I think he understood by the end. I get particularly frustrated by him. I think he's a very, very good pundit and he seems like a very nice guy. But the other day, for example, Spurs played Man United and he was this co-commentator. And as soon as United conceded, he stopped answering questions. He stopped saying anything positive about Tottenham. He was just like, the main commentator was saying, oh, you know, look, it looks like Tottenham have blah, blah, blah. And he would just go like, yeah. So that there is a bit of an issue, I think, with fans and things going on. The line between the fan and the pundit has been, but that's also a nice thing, isn't it? I think that's what makes you guys so popular.
Yeah. Well, also, you know, I mean, the thing that really sometimes makes me laugh is that you have, so in the case of Gary Neville, right, who was sort of having a go at the fans I was interviewing at the time, having a pop at Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, why do they put in so much pressure on this great guy, which he was a great manager, right?
Yeah.
To then, a little bit down the line, hear him saying exactly the same things what they were saying, that, you know, his time is up, he should go. And remember, right, the thing is about it is that fans, they're going and they're watching their team play every single week.
Yeah.
So a lot of times they have got a better insight than Gary Neville or these pundits, because pundits go to where they're sent to. If you, Gary, we want you to go and cover Crystal Palace versus blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? But an Arsenal fan goes to watch Arsenal games, watches week in, week out, gets to see, you know, how many times even you as a fan, there'll be a player that other fans of other clubs might say, oh, I don't really rate him. And you'd be like, no, actually,
yeah,
he's a good player. He's
solid. I don't think we've got any right now, mate. but we have done. Who would I say? Yeah, Harry Winks? I don't know.
there's a lot of players like that, and there's a lot of players that everybody rates. I remember the other day I was talking to, it was a couple of months ago, actually, before the COVID thing, I'll say the other day.
Yeah.
I was talking to some Leicester fans, and they, like, I was like going on about Ben Chilwell, and I was saying, such a good player. And a lot of them were like, oh, I don't know, man. You know what? I'd sell him. And I was like, what, Chilwell?
Are you kidding?
I was like, you lot would sell Chilwell? We thought he's like, they go, oh, you know what, Robbie, you don't watch him every week. He's a good player, but he's defensively, he's not very strong. He's good at getting forward. But so you don't, fans, they watch their players every week and they know their players inside out. I know every fan has different opinions and sometimes, well, a lot of times we don't agree with what each other said, but that's the beauty of AFTV is that, you know, you've got so many different opinions thrown into one pot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be interviewing people after a game and that, and I am not agreeing with anything they said, but it's their opinion. So they should be allowed to have that.
If Ben Chilwell is listening, Tottenham have a space at left back for you where you'll be appreciated. But I still, and I agree with you, and I think maybe others would disagree with this, but I still agree that a fan who's there every week has a better understanding of the player.
It's the whole reason I started doing this, because I used to get very frustrated at listening to pundits. I'd go to a game and I'd see stuff, all my mates would have been sort of, we more or less be on the same page. And then I go home and watch it on Match of the Day or something, and they say a completely different opinion. And I'm like, that's not what happened, you know? So yeah. I'm like, why can't we hear from, because you never heard from fans. I've always thought, up until when we sort of come around, fans have just been literally what you've seen recently in grounds, where they're getting cutouts there. You know what I mean? We've been treated like that in the past. You know, our opinions have not been valued. You've seen fans sometimes been on TV shows, for instance, right? And they're just in the audience bring your tops, wear your tops, right? So we can create the fans, right? But we've never heard from those fans. So we're the first people, or one of the first, I think, to let fans have their say. And on our platform, fans have their say and get heard as well.
You mentioned consistency, which is something that I think you on YouTube works very, very well. But I think maybe you're selling yourself short, because I think there's a lot more to it, obviously, that goes on. I mean, first of all, you are the presenter. You're the Louis Theroux. You're the the Gary Lineker. From my opinion, you're very calm and you're just listening to the others. And it's almost like your calmness, in a very Louis Theroux way, is almost offset by the madness going on around you. Would you say that's a fair appraisal of your style?
Nobody's ever called me Louis Theroux before.
Well,
some of the nutters I interview, I suppose I've got that Louis Theroux. But you know what? I just like, all right, so how I always view it at games is, my job is to let that fan have his opinion. But question, you know, if I feel like, and sort of you're in, I do play devil's advocate a lot. Yeah. And, you know, you have to, because there's sometimes, as I said, I've interviewed some people, I'm like, yo, what are you talking about? But I don't agree with them. Yeah. But you've got to let them have their opinion, but you've got to question it. So if somebody says, well, I don't think, I don't think Arteta's up for the job. Well, I'll be like, well, why is he not up for the job? And I will ask them questions that I want them to, you know. But I always try to let people have their say, because it's their opinion, you know what I mean? And their opinion is going to be different to my opinion, different to your opinion. So I just try to operate in that way, in which let that person have their say, let them talk, don't talk all over them. And I'll just try and keep it simple, really.
What's going through your mind when you're holding out a microphone and DT, is that his name?
DT, yeah.
Is going berserk because you've lost 4-0 to Liverpool. Is that a point where you're thinking, okay, he's losing his mind here, but this is good? Is part of you, as I would be doing, is part of you thinking like, keep going, mate? And do you want to sort of nudge?
No. So again, what I'm doing sometimes is like, I'm like, you know, I can actually understand why this guy's losing his rag, because I'm pissed off as well. I feel like how he feels. But the other thing that I really try not to do is I just want it to be natural. I don't want to be there throwing in things to make it, you know, wind people up. And so, you know, like you've got radio stations and that, and they'll be like, oh, call in now and let us know how you're feeling, and should this person be sacked? And I try to be natural with it. So I try to be like, I ask the questions that need to be asked. You know what I mean? What did you think of that guy's performance? Did he cost us a goal? What, you know what I mean? I'll just ask real questions and allow them to answer. So at that time, when people are really emotional, you know, I think I'm more of a sort of thing like, I'm understanding how they're feeling, because, you know, as a football fan, you understand.
Sure. I would be trying to wind them up more.
You was a Tottenham fan, I think if you was interviewing Tottenham fans, you wouldn't try and wind them up, because would also, honestly, you would be upset with a defeat, and you would find that you have not got to wind nobody up, because they're talking from here, they're talking from the heart, they're upset, and it works both ways. Sometimes when you've had a big win, because that's what we like as football fans, when we've lost, we're really, really down. Sometimes when we win, we're irrationally high, you know what I mean? And these players are better than Messi and stuff. You know what I mean? So you've just got to, you know, that is football for you. That's one of the reasons why we love it so much.
Do you ever sit there and think, maybe, you know, going to sleep at night and think, God, what is all of this, the football? Because I've had moments, especially when Tottenham had a few players who were just like earning ridiculous sums of money and playing awfully. And I thought, they wouldn't care if I died. They wouldn't even know. And what am I getting so wound up about this thing? I have no control over it. It's ridiculous. They could change the everything about it. The chairman could go, the players could go, the name could change, like MK Dons, the stadiums. And then what are we even supporting?
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying on that. And I think that's the thing that winds me up sometimes about the treatment of fans, because that's how we feel.
Yeah.
But players, they can go. I question sometimes how they feel. It's one of the reasons at the moment I feel with even the owner of our football club. Question when we've had a bad defeat. Obviously, he's based over in America. We hardly ever see him.
Yeah.
I question if he's hurting. You know, he owns a lot of football clubs and, you know, and I was sort of saying it. I was giving the analogy the other day. I was doing a show and I was saying that it's a bit like you own a house in another city or something like that, right? And it's being rented out by the local estate agents. And the only time you're going to be concerned with it is if it's completely gone wrong. Like there's a, you know, but as long as it's ticking along, it doesn't really, you don't really think about that place. And I question how much he does. He feel like how we feel. I don't think he does, you know.
No.
And if fans, that's how we feel. You know, I mean, the manager, Arsene Wenger's greatest manager Arsenal have ever had. They asked him the other day. They said, "Would you come back?" He said, "Not right now. I don't really want to come back. I don't." You know what I mean? So he can detach himself even away from the club, but as a fan, you can't. It's your club. It's what you've grown with. It's your, and you do feel it. You do feel
that's,
it.
That's why I was actually, I was in the Wenger in campaign, obviously partly because you were doing so badly, it was better for a Spurs fan if he stayed in, but also just, I liked that he was sort of the last bastion of like somebody who cared about a club and was there. And Tottenham at towards the end had the same thing with not as long, but Pochettino was the first time I ever felt that. And it does change, at Harry Kane as well, and it does change how you feel about it and you get more into it. What we're seeing in Corona right now, with no fans, it does completely spoil the atmosphere in the game. So hopefully they'll start to take fans more seriously. Well,
yeah, that's one of the things with coronavirus, right? Is that what's, again, you're seeing all of the players, you're seeing all of the owners, the managers, everybody saying, oh, it's not the same without the fans. Oh, it's so important. Oh, all the TV companies, the same TV companies that will put a game on at 5:30, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock on a Monday night away at Newcastle.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got no way of getting home after that, but they don't care because it's just for TV. Now, all of a sudden, oh, the fans, it's not the same. Oh, now they've seen the importance of the fans. I don't think, you know, and that goes for all departments, whether it be from the TV companies to a lot of the, not all the players, but a lot of players, they've not really cared properly about fans. Now, now that we're not there, they're seeing that without, you know, without us, there's no game. The game is not the same. You're seeing it. And every single player is moaning about it and saying, oh, you know, it's not the same without the fans. You know, particularly you see, I mean, we played Sheffield United. Honestly, when I went there earlier on in the season, it was such a raucous atmosphere. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why they won that game. Their fans got them over the line. Has been doing that all season. But you've
seen struggling now. United,
they're struggling since they've come back. Yeah. Because all of a sudden, that 12th man isn't there. So let's hope that when, you know, eventually we get over this whole COVID-19 stuff, right, they start to value fans, you know? Look at the amount of money they've lost on match day revenue.
What you're saying resonates, obviously, because the video that has the most hits on your channel, I think it's got a few million, is the Liverpool 4-0 defeat, which is DT just going berserk. And right in the middle of that speech, he says, they don't give a fuck about us. Which, yeah, I mean, that's what he's saying, isn't he? That's why that has so many views. That's why it resonates with fans. We do a lot feel
of fans, yeah, you know, if you're a fan of Newcastle, you know how we feel. If you're a fan of, you know, I mean, there's so many other clubs, not even just Premier League, you know. Yeah. We saw what happened with Bury and that, you know, I mean, right down the football pyramid, you know, I mean, I just don't feel that sometimes those, it doesn't matter what your club is, your feeling is the same. You know what I mean? A Bury fan feels the same as how I feel.
Do you think when DT, when Claude, troops, when they are losing their mind like that and really getting aggressive, do you ever think it might be about something more than football in their lives? When they're saying, you know, they don't give a fuck about us, is there something else going on? Because it's real anger, isn't it? It's really quite extreme.
It's real anger because these guys love their football club. Yeah. They absolutely love it, right? You know what I mean? They may be a bit more emotional than a lot of other people, but they absolutely love the club. And when the club is not doing well, they really, really feel, it really affects them. They really, really feel it because, you know, they absolutely love Arsenal. They've been supporting Arsenal all their life. Sometimes their team can lose. You'll see fans go, you know what, I'm not even going to get on them today. Because, you know what, they tried, they put it in. What really winds fans up is when players don't care. You're going to represent my club. I want to see you give everything, right, and go down fighting. So These guys, you know, they get very emotional because they, you know, they absolutely love the club. They want the club to do the best.
Did you know them before?
I didn't know any of them before. No, I didn't. I didn't used to go to the games of any of those guys. I've met them all through doing AFTV.
Are you all good mates now?
Yeah, I get on well with all of them. I get on well with all of them now. But I met them all just through interviewing them. I remember when I first met Troops, for instance, this was a really funny story because we finished doing our interviews and we were packing up because obviously we do our interviews and then we got to get them all uploaded and stuff like that. And we just finished doing about 20 interviews with various different fans and he came along. And he's like, oh, I want to get on. I've got stuff to say. And I said, yo, mate, I'm sorry. We're done. You know what I mean? And he kept going on and on and on and on. Oh, come on. I want to say something. And then in the end, I just said to like my camera guy, I said, you know what? Let's just do this guy just to get rid of him, man. You know what I mean? Because he's there chatting. If we just do him, we just get rid of him and into it, right? And then he came on and you could see he was very charismatic and that. And I was like, actually, this guy was pretty good. Wow. And then I think what happens with a lot of fans is they'll come on, they'll have their say, and sometimes if they get a good reaction, you know, you can see in the comments, people are like saying, yeah, I really liked what you had to say and that, then that gives them the balls to come back again and do it another week. And that's through time, they can become sort of regulars to the channel. But I didn't know any of these guys before. Before I didn't used to go to football with any of them. So
are you able to make a living purely out of the success of the channel at the moment?
Yeah, the channel is my business now, you know. So when I first started doing it, I was working. I used to work as a building surveyor and I was working full time for about the first nearly 3.5-4 years. And then I, you know, became so big that I left, taking on a few members of staff. Since I do like social media and got a couple of camera guys and admin and stuff like that.
Who edits the videos together?
My camera guys edit as well. So, you know, we're still quite a small team, but we're a very, very slick moving team, very fast moving team, you know?
What about the guys, the regulars? Do they get paid to come on?
Nobody ever gets paid to come and do an interview after the game. We do some shows where, you know, obviously those guys will get paid for doing shows that are not to do with a game. But for me, when it's a match day, you know, I just want somebody to come out of the ground and just be natural and say their piece. And I've had sometimes some of those guys, they've been too upset to come on. They haven't even come on that game, you know?
Yeah. Have they ever asked for that or taken issue about it, you know?
No, you know what? I've never, ever had a fan, even some of those guys that are become very big regulars, say to me, oh, can I get paid for doing a game? Never, ever. Okay. What a lot of them, a few of them have been able to do is they've been able to start their own YouTube channels and do something, you know, so.
Yeah, it's been massive for them.
Yeah, it's been good for them. It's helped them with their profiles. So they've been able to do that. They've been able to do various different things.
What about when tensions spill over? Do you ever fear for your life or anything? Because I know there was a particular Arsenal game, and there was also the Arsenal Spurs game. And those are just ones I know off the top of my head where it spilled over.
I fear for my life every time I go Spurs. But no, I don't. I've been going to football for a long time, and it used to be a lot worse than what it was now. It is now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially as a black fan.
Yeah.
But when I go to Spurs, I know what to expect, right? I have to be careful. The majority of fans are cool. They don't like you on that day.
But aren't some of them friendly? Because I think if I saw you in the street, I'd have been like, oh, it's you from Arsenal TV. You know, isn't there some of that?
They're like that before the game, and then afterwards they want to kill you.
Yeah, depending on the result.
Depending on the result. But no, yeah. I mean, no, to be fair, like, I remember that incident you're talking about when I went to Spurs and I got that hassle outside the game. Spurs actually won that game as well.
Oh, right.
I remember my brother saying to me, imagine if they'd have lost, right? To be fair, right, most of the people that sort of gathered around me were giving me stick. It wasn't bad. It was like, it was banter.
Okay.
They go, Robbie, what's the score and stuff? But then there were some little guys now on the fringes that started to, you know, and one of them racially abused me and stuff like that. And I really always like to say, listen, it's a real minority. The majority of those fans that were there were cool. I've had a couple of incidents with some Arsenal fans who've been not happy with what we do. And I don't have a problem with people saying, oh, I don't like what you do. But when people want to come and be all aggressive with you and threaten you and stuff like that, as I said to those guys, that don't work with me. I mean, bullying and stuff like that, it's just not going to work. You know what I mean? You're going to come and try and bully me and say, yo, stop that now. No, never, ever.
I'm very sorry to hear about the racial abuse in particular, but all of the abuse you've gotten, particularly, you know, especially from my fellow Tottenham fans.
I don't see the thing is, right, I don't mind abuse from Tottenham fans. I understand it, right? I understand the rivalry, right? It was just when that incident. And to be fair, you know what? How many Tottenham fans got into contact with me after that and said, oh, Robbie, we're really sorry. And I'm like, you ain't got to be sorry. I know it's not you. It's not you guys. Yeah. And even the club, to be fair to Tottenham, after that incident, the club contacted me the next day when they saw like the video and that. And they said, yo, listen, we find out who done this. We'll ban them and stuff like that. So that was nice. I mean, there are still issues of, you know, racism that exists in football. It's not as bad as it used to be.
I remember my first, I must have been about 4 or 5, no, I was a bit older, 8 or 9 years old. I mean, not my first, but one of my first memories. I was at Chelsea and me and my dad were in the Chelsea end because I, you know, couldn't get tickets. And
you're brave.
Man, the amount of like anti-Semitic stuff, the whistling to do the gas chamber stuff.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you still I've heard that even with some of our fans, and I've been disgusted when we played Spurs. And I'm like, yeah, what's that all about, man? I mean,
yeah,
this is the 2020, and people are still, you know, and you know, we've probably got just as many Jewish people involved with our club as they have got with their club. It's absolutely ridiculous, and it doesn't matter, even you know, it's so. Honestly, I just can't get my head around it when I hear fans. I there was a game last year with Payton.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who was sort of doing some of that. So I had to say to him, yo, bruv, cut that out, man.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, come on, Robbie. He says to everyone. I said, no. Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting. Yeah, you know?
It's a crowd mentality a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what I mean? And then you get people that will be doing stuff. They don't even realise in the moment what they're doing. They don't realise that, you know, and it is very, very offensive. We've got at Arsenal, we've got loads and loads and loads of Jewish fans.
So some of the stuff, it becomes so normalised because I remember when I was 13 or 14 or something, we'd sing at Tottenham, Sit Down, You Paedophile, to Arsene Wenger, which is just, you know, it's totally unacceptable to say. But I was 13 or 14. And I just didn't even really know what a paedophile was. So I was standing up and singing it as loud as anyone, just screaming it. And it was only as I got older, I hated Wenger. And as I got older, I thought, oh, he seems like quite a nice bloke, actually. I wouldn't mind having him around for tea. You know what? He's obviously managing the club that I hate or whatever, but he seems like a nice bloke. I was calling him a, what did I call him? I called him a paedophile. It's ridiculous.
I mean, some people, it is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And I think I hate it at football when we step over the line like that.
Yeah.
I know back in the day that was common.
Yeah.
But I think nowadays, you know, I mean, you can still, you know, have a dig, you know, at Jose Mourinho without doing stuff like that. You know what I mean? As an Arsenal fan, I just don't like it. But luckily, as I said, it's not as bad as, you know, I go up and down. I go to every single game. I've been to like every...
Have you got family at home?
I have got family at home. Listen, they know that I've always done football. So that's my one thing.
Do you have to do something to make up for it or something?
I do a lot of things to make up.
You got all the chores.
lots and lots, yeah. I've met quite a few of these footballers.
Who's disappointed you the most in person?
Disappointed me?
Yeah.
Or are you gonna hang me out to dry now?
Yeah.
Disappointed me.
Yeah. Bellerin, have you met him?
I haven't.
Because he was having a go, wasn't he?
He's had a pop at us. I have met Bellerin before. Yeah. I'd met him before he had a pop at us.
Yeah.
I have no problem when people say to me, oh, Robbie, do you hate Bellerin now? But I said, no chance, right? He's an Arsenal player. I want the guy to do well on the pitch because if he does well, the club does well. I don't agree with what he says. I've accepted it a long time ago that not everybody's going to like what we do. Just like I don't like every program I watch on TV. So it's what it is. Yeah. So I'll tell you one person I met, right, that I was like, you know what? Unfortunately, he was a nice guy, and that was Harry Kane.
Oh, was he?
I was at St. George's Park at this England event.
Okay, yeah.
And he came out, and I have to say, he like signed everything for everybody. Not me, but he signed everything for everyone. He was, I was like, hey, he's a proper guy. And then he walked past me and he looked at me and goes, I know who you are.
Oh, did he?
Right. And I go, yeah, I know who you are as well. Right. And then he just walked, he smiled and he walked off. But all the players sort of came out and they were signing things for players, for all the fans that were waiting there. But there's a lot who just, you know how they deal with these footballers. Yeah. Sign, gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
He like went down the whole line. He took his time. Yeah, I was very impressed with that.
What I wouldn't give for Harry Kane to walk past and go, I know you.
Yeah, well,
he doesn't know me. I suppose the way you feel about Harry Kane is how I felt about Thierry Henry all those years, because again, what a gentleman.
He's such a nice guy, he is, man.
I don't know a Tottenham fan who hates Thierry Henry.
You can't, because he was such a great footballer. I mean, you can hate him because, you know, but he's such a great footballer. But would you feel the same way if you met Sol Campbell?
I did meet Sol Campbell, you know.
Oh, did you? What was that like?
Someone will know when this was, but it was the FA Cup semi-final. It was Tottenham Newcastle. He was still at Spurs. It was just before he left, about a month before he left Spurs. Tottenham played Newcastle, I think it was, at Old Trafford. And by coincidence, we were staying in the same hotel as the Tottenham fans, the Tottenham players, which makes me sound like my family's a millionaire. They're really not, but it wasn't a posh hotel. It just happened to be a normal hotel they were all in. I walked past a door. There was this door open. And I don't know why I just peeked. I was 11 years old or 12. I peeked inside. It's all the Spurs players getting massages and stuff. I waited outside this room for ages and got signatures from all the, you know, that was the thing back in the day, wasn't it? My little book, autograph book.
Yeah.
And Sol Campbell came out. And obviously he was like my hero, absolute hero, as Ledley King or Harry Kane is now. And I said to him, like, you're not going to leave, are you? And he went, no. He was gone 2 months later. That's not to say that I would, if he walked into this room now, I'd sit down and have a lovely, you know, I'm not mental. I'm not going to be like, you left my club. He didn't do it in the right way. That was the thing. But it's
he definitely didn't do it. I got Tottenham mates. They have not forgiven him. It's almost like they're as vociferous now about it as they was then. I'm like, yo, get over it, man. I'm like, how many years ago was that?
He lied to me. He lied to an 11-year-old boy, but maybe he didn't know at the time he was definitely going to go.
Yeah, well, you know what? When Alexis was leaving Arsenal, he saw troops.
Yeah,
And that was like that was like literally a day before he left, and troops asked him as well, "Are you leaving?" He said, "Nah."
Because why would you say yes, I suppose?
By the next day, he's up in Manchester playing a piano. You know what I mean?
So that's an interesting point, though, because I suppose for you, it's like, you know, Gary Neville or Bellerin's having a pop, and then you actually meet them and they're quite nice and it's a bit awkward. But there's also, not necessarily you, but I suppose more the people around you are having a real pop at people, like especially Alexis. is it a bit awkward bumping into these footballers and they know you've been having a go?
I've bumped into a few. And they've been, to be fair, on the whole, they've been all right. I remember I saw Lacazette in Dubai and he was like, yeah, he goes, I'm cool with it, man. He's like, if fans have a go, normally they're right. You know, I remember Kanu said to me, he goes, I wish we had what you guys do back in our day. But he goes, any player that takes it to heart, he goes, come on, man. He goes, they shouldn't take it to heart. Mm. It's, you know where you're playing badly. You know when you're not performing. That's what a lot of players have said to me. So, and they also know that they get so much praise when they're doing well.
What player at Arsenal right now do you hate?
Do I hate? I don't hate any player, really. I don't hate. Honestly, and I'm not just saying that because you put me on the spot with that.
Who's your favourite, then?
My favourite player is probably Aubameyang, because I just feel that, like, he's... he's dug us out of a hole all season. I also like the way he connects with the fans. Whether he stays or not, it's another question.
Where do you think Arsenal would be without him right now?
Well, we'd be probably in the bottom three, you know what I mean, this season, because he's been the guy who scored all the goals. So, you know, it's going to be really difficult to keep hold of him because he's 31 now. He probably wants to do something special before his career is finished. And we're not really in that position at the moment. But I met Granit Xhaka. The funny thing is about it, Xhaka, of course, he had that real falling out with the fans.
Yes.
When he stormed off. I was really surprised at that, right? Because when I met Xhaka, I know he gets a lot of stick. I met him, I remember I was at an event. We just had a loss. And I was talking to him, I was like, hey. And he was like, he was even saying, no, and yeah, I was really upset about that loss. And he was, because I can't remember the exact game, but he was saying, you know what? He goes, what we should have done was just get out of there with a point. And we tried to go gung-ho for the victory and we lost the game. And he goes, we were all really hurting. And I think that fans, that's what we want to hear sometimes.
Yeah.
All these players, all these football clubs have these big accounts. You know, they'll have a bad loss and then they're tweeting out or sending out something about the latest shirt or something like that. That's not always the right time. You know what I mean? Sometimes I think the fans want to hear from... Fans sometimes just want to know that the players feel like how they feel. So another one, you'll see this is a common thing amongst fans. I've seen it on our channel. I've seen it on other channels that do it. A game's finished. Your team's lost. Every one of those players has walked straight down the tunnel. They've not even come and acknowledged the fans, especially at away games.
Yeah.
Fans really get angry about that. And I know that it's a bit of a double-edged sword because you might go up to clap those fans and there might be some of them saying, oh, piss off. We know you look like shit today.
Eric Dyer, you saw Dyer the other month before Corona. He walked into the stands.
Yeah, when he ran into, I think that's out of order.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know they're saying this stuff that his brother might have been in some, you know, I can understand that, but let the stewards deal with that. What are you getting up in here for?
He got well.
I just look on it and I just say to myself, acknowledge, fans just want to know. They want to know that you feel like how we feel. We're hurting after that defeat.
What's your vision for the future? Do you just want to be doing AFTV forever? Or do you see yourself sort of, I know you're doing something with Channel 4 now. You just done something with ITV. Are you crossing, making that very difficult cross from digital to sort of traditional analog?
Yeah, I'm still looking to, I did a documentary for ITV, which actually came out during the pandemic, which was a bit of a, but it still went down really, really well. It's been nominated for an award.
Was it BAFTA?
Greeson Award, I think.
Okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much. That's for the documentaries. So I've got like a, that was sort of a co-production. And I've got like a production company just doing, so I'm looking to do more stuff in TV.
Cool.
So that is one thing, one area that I'm looking to get into more and also looking to expand what we're doing with AFTV, just keep getting bigger and better. So I'm looking to do more TV stuff in the future, but what I do love is the social media stuff. I love the YouTube. I love, because you can, there's less restrictions, you know what I mean? And you can, you know, I like the speed of it. I like how you can, on social media, how you can communicate with people, you know what I mean? And people can comment instantly on what you do and you can, you know, I love the interaction of it. So,
well, you filmed something this morning and it was up a couple hours later.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we film stuff every single day, and sometimes stuff is up within, I mean, the stuff that we do on a match day is up within about 10 minutes, 20 minutes of us doing it. You know, we get it out straight away. So it's all about being in a conversation.
Do you mind me asking if you have children?
I do, yeah.
How old are they?
I've got a daughter who's 20, just turned 20. I've got an 11-year-old and I've got a 12-year-old.
What do they say when they see you all over YouTube everywhere?
Dad, can you help me with my YouTube channel?
Self-serving, aren't they, kids? They're so self-serving. Yeah. Do you ever worry that like any of the abuse or whatever that you might get online, that they might see some of that, or is it just not that bad?
Do you know what? I don't know. I think there was that incident with the Arsenal fans where like my daughter's ringing me up asking me if I'm all right and stuff like that. And my son, they did all see that and they was a bit upset about it. But on the whole, they're cool, man. I think they know that I'm quite responsive. You know, I think they've seen that I'm a person. Things don't really get to me. You know what I mean? It's not going to, you know, so...
It must be cool as well, because like, you know, apart from being an actual footballer, it's sort of the next best thing, having a dad who's doing all the fan TV and everything. Can you play as well? I saw you hit the crossbar in the crossbar challenge.
Yeah, I beat Thierry Henry in a crossbar challenge. That's my claim to fame. I'm not very good at football. No, you know what? When I was younger, I wanted to be like everybody else, this great footballer. It just didn't work out.
Yeah, me too.
I just stay there and criticise everybody else, you know what I mean? That's why I have mad respect for footballers, because I see, you know, how hard it is for them to make it. Any footballers playing in the Premier League.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. They're ridiculously good, even though we still criticise them.
I used to think every club should have 10 normal players, and then one player should be a randomly selected fan from the stadium every game.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, I would love, like, you'd have to be eligible. So you'd have to say, like, you know, maybe you're under a certain age, or you want to play. And it's just a random player. And I, you know, I'd be up front for Spurs, you'd be up front for Arsenal. We'd have a great laugh.
I think you'd see that your level would be so far below them.
I think I'd die.
I have no problem with them earning the money they earn. I just want to know that when you're on that pitch, though, and you're representing my team, you're putting it in.
I hope when they're representing your team, they're not putting it in.
And vice versa with you. We got you guys coming up soon, so.
Robbie was an absolute delight and a man with his feet firmly planted on the ground. I'm impressed by the following he's been able to amass, and convinced that it's not all down to luck or consistency, but also talent, hard work, and a real feeling for the beat of the fan's heart. If you're curious, check out his channel, AFTV, on YouTube. Subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're using, and find me on Twitter through AndrewGold_OK. I'll post links to extra photos and video clips from the pods there, as well as to documentaries on my YouTube page. Next week, I'll be speaking to former racist from the BNP and National Front, Matthew Collins, who ended up becoming a spy and helping to save the life of an MP.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.